19th, 2005, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 68. Please, staff report.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at the last meeting on this bill, Representative Garrard raised the issue as to whether the permit to be issued for use of ATVs on these Ocean Shore areas, whether that should be a fee or a non-fee permit. We have a dash one amendment that's been drafted that would make it a non-fee permit. It simply says the department may not charge for a permit issued under this section, and that is the section that deals with the ATV use permit.
Mr. Wood, would you like to say yes or no, or you're happy with it?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Clark.
I would move the dash ones into Senate Bill 68.
All right. Any discussion? Any objections?
Well, given the acquiescence of the department, I have no objection, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. With the majority in favor, I will declare that accepted, approved.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
I would move Senate Bill 68 as amended to the floor for the due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrard moves Senate Bill 68 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any objections? Any discussion? All right. The clerk will call a roll.
Representative Dolan?
Excused.
Representative Lynn?
Excused.
Representative
Rosenbaum? Excused.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 61, as amended, is passed to the floor. 68, with the amendments, has been approved and is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I suggest a consent calendar?
Yes, that would be great. We will approve that going to the consent calendar, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 68. I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 962, and I'd like to call Representative Vicki Berger to introduce this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. I can't thank you enough for your attention to this bill, and I know that you're kind of, it's sort of a split committee hearing process because you started hearing this a couple of days ago, and I did not come down at that time because I was tied up in revenue. And it came as a kind of a surprise to me, since I've been involved in this bill in the beginning, that I've probably not announced, since it is a Senate bill, that Senator Montes Anderson and I actually pre-session became interested in this issue and were together in this bill, although it is a Senate bill. My interest in the subject of PBDE stems from my fairly new status in life. I am the grandmother of a 16-month-old boy, and I'm so totally enamored of this new role that my staff refers to him simply as the king of the world, which he most assuredly is.
Close.
And it caught my eye, therefore, when a news report came out last year that the Northwesterners have an inordinate amount of flame-retardant chemicals in breast milk. I am not the kind of person that overreacts to that kind of news, and there's plenty of reasons to be vigilant in protecting from fires, which is why flame retardants are around. But as our studies of the risks and benefits reveal unforeseen problems, it's time to be proactive in reducing some of these known chemical dangers. There is plenty of scientists available to talk about these various chemicals, and I won't go there. I would trust your interest in the scientific data before you. But I think that we need first to think about the statement that we make about this, and I believe that this bill will acknowledge our collective will to use science intelligently and to reduce known risks. I'm interested in this for the sake of my grandchildren and all of Oregon families. So, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I probably will not stay for all of the testimony on this because I do have to go back to revenue, but I'm kind of happy to finally come before this committee and tell you that this has been an important bill for me from the beginning, and I deeply appreciate your attention to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for coming, Representative Berger. And I think we have a full list of folks that would like to testify. Let me call Dr. Jan Semenes, is that correct? And Sarah Dahl.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, and members of the committee for this opportunity to come before you today. My name is Sarah Dahl, and I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council. We support Senate Bill 962 and urge you to strengthen it. The ban on Penta and Octa is largely symbolic at this point. It's only when we really talk about reducing risk from DECA that we take a step forward in Oregon to protect public health. You may have heard that DECA is not a problem. It's not showing up in significant amounts in breast milk, that alternatives have not been adequately studied, that reducing DECA will increase the risk of fire, and that if Oregon takes action to reduce risk from DECA, that we'll be acting alone, that no one else is really going there. And we're going to talk about all of those issues today. What's particularly disturbing about these flame retardants is that they're everywhere. They're in consumer products, they're in homes, they're in our mattresses and couches, they're probably in the chairs that you're sitting on. I'm pretty sure they're in the chair that I'm sitting on. The makers of the DECA form of the chemical are arguing that DECA should not be phased out. However, we believe that due to the mounting scientific evidence, the pervasiveness of the chemical, and Dr. Semenza is going to speak to this issue, we really believe that they should be treated as a family of compounds and phased out. There are viable alternatives already on the market, and industry leaders are already leading the way to go there. Numerous manufacturers have already phased out the use of these chemicals in part to meet the ban in the European Union that is set to go in effect July 1st, 2006 of DECA in electronics. And I wanted to clarify what else is happening in the world around PWEs. And the main point that I want you to take away from that is that other nations and states are taking action to reduce the risk from all three forms, including DECA, and Oregon should too. So the European Union has banned Penta and Octa. And next summer, the ban on DECA will go into effect in its use application in electronics as a result of the ROS directive, which is restrictions on hazardous substances. And the EU is concerned enough about DECA application to actually put it in the ban proactively. And there is lobbying to exempt DECA from that ban, but the ban stands. And recently, Europe's top scientific environmental committee evaluated the EU risk assessment of May 2004, and it disagreed with the risk assessment findings. And that is part one of the handouts that you have. Is the actual findings from the committee. The science panel, while they said it was a good risk assessment, they strongly disagreed with the recommendations of that committee and said the science panel strongly recommends that further risk reduction measures for DECA. The panel found that emissions of DECA to the environment may constitute serious problems in the future and also stated that there is now more evidence that DECA breaks down into potentially harmful compounds. It further states that diffuse, widespread emission may continue as long as there are consumer goods containing DECA. This is the top science panel in the European Union directly addressing the European Union risk assessment of May 2004. Other nations, including Sweden, the Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, have already instituted programs to reduce risk or phase out the use of all PBDs, including DECA. Additional actions to reduce risk from DECA are under consideration in numerous countries, including Canada, Norway, and China. And as a result, most European manufacturers are already moving away from these chemicals because as long as there's a conversation about it, as the industry sector makes more sense to go to an alternative that you don't think is going to be a part of a longer conversation. The World Health Organization recommends that brominated flame retardants, quote, should not be used where suitable replacements are available, and future efforts should encourage the development of further substitutes. It's important to have the Department of Environmental Service or of Human Services monitor all brominated flame retardants because concerns about the entire class of chemicals is expanding. For example, delegates to the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants, this is a global treaty designed to protect human health from chemicals that build up in the environment, have agreed to consider four new chemicals to the treaty. One of them is hexa-BDE, which is not something we're talking about today, but simply I highlight the fact that this brominated flame retardants is a whole class of chemicals. We're only talking about the polybrominated ones here, but we need to have some agency in the state of Oregon paying attention to what's happening on these chemicals more broadly, just so that we're ahead of the curve as opposed to behind the curve. Several states have taken action to reduce risk from PBDEs. Several states took early action on penta and octa, including California, Hawaii, New York, Michigan, and Washington, Maine have gone further to take steps to reduce risk from DECA. In Washington State, a July 2004 executive order directed the state to develop a plan to reduce threats from PBDEs. And after extensive research, it's a 150-page report, the State Health and Ecology Agency submitted a December 2000 interim report, of which you have the executive summary there, which recommends that by December 2005, the state submit a plan to ban products containing DECA. The follow-up letter from the Washington State Ecology and Health Agencies to the governor specifically states, quote, we conclude that action on DECA-BDE is warranted. Maine passed a law that prohibits penta and octa, and then the law itself states it is the intent of the legislature to reduce the risk of DECA by implementing risk management measures or by banning the sale of products containing DECA beginning January 1st, 2008, if, quote, a safer nationally available alternative is identified, which is the direction that Senate Bill 962 has been going from the Senate. So bills are pending in other states, Connecticut, Maryland, Montana. And the other piece of this is that major corporations, according to Dell, many large corporations and governments have actually developed procurement standards, guidelines that prohibit the use of PBDEs in electronic products. In closing, I would just like to highlight the breadth of groups supporting this legislation, including the Oregon Pediatric Society, Medical Society of Metropolitan Portland, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Pediatric Nurse Practitioner Association, the Oregon Center for Environmental Health, and more. These groups supported the original bill because they believe it's important to protect our children's future. The current bill, while taking some steps forward, could be modified in a small way to achieve stronger protections. The -12 amendment would allow the Department of Human Services to complete their evaluation, implement their findings without additional time-consuming process of coming back to the legislature. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions from the panel? Got a couple that I wanted to ask. You mentioned alternatives in your opening remarks. What are those alternatives to DECA?
I'm actually going to turn that over to someone else on the panel. Angela Crowley-Coach will be talking about the alternatives.
Okay. And you also mentioned a number of scientific reports. Could we have copies of those?
Sure. Absolutely.
If you'd forward those. Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Question.
Sparked a question in my mind. Ms. Dahl, you mentioned a -812 amendment and kind of ran over it. Could you tell me briefly what the purpose of that amendment would be?
The purpose of the amendment would be to, currently as written, Senate Bill 962 directs the Department of Human Services to look into viable safer alternatives for DECA. Mm-hmm. And what the DASH, as I understand the DASH amendments would do, is that they would then, if the Department of Human Services found that there were viable safer alternatives, it would give them authority to then implement a ban on products containing the DECA.
If there are
nationally viable, safer alternatives that the Department of Human Services identifies, that then they would be able to move forward with a ban on products containing DECA.
But if I might follow up,
sure.
Please. So really the standard there then would be as I see this issue, we're trying to weigh the benefits and risks. These are flame retardants, and so they serve a certain purpose. They minimize or eliminate the chance of fire that might spread and cause property damage, but more particularly injury and fatalities. And that's one risk and a benefit that we're trying to avoid, and we're trying to use the beneficial value of that product to avoid the risk. The other one then is the pervasive presence of that chemical and what impact that has mm-hmm. across all the people who, because of proximity to the upholstery and things, can't avoid it. And the amendment is intended to say, if there is a safe alternative that's commercially available, then a safer, not just as safe, but it has to be proven to be safer than what we have now, then we'd move toward a preference for that safer alternative. Okay. Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I apologize, I missed the opening of your testimony if you answered this, but the other day the industry testified that the European Union had sort of reversed itself and decided not to move ahead with a ban on DECA, and I heard you to be saying something different from that. So could you just restate exactly what is going on with the European Union?
Chair Anderson, Representative Rosenbaum, it's very confusing. Is the short answer of that. What has happened, the European Union banned DECA as of July, the ban is set to go into effect July 1st, 2006. The risk assessment came out in 2004, and there was some movement to exempt DECA from the ban. That the most recent vote of that did not exempt DECA from the ban, so the ban stands. There are several sort of parallel things happening in the European Union to attempt to exempt DECA from that ban, but it has not been exempted, there are several. It's a conversation. This evaluation by the science committee came in after the risk assessment and sort of has halted and has slowed the conversation around exempting DECA from the ban. So there is a conversation happening in the European Union around this, but the top committee of the European Commission, which is the one that has the authority to exempt DECA from the ROS directive, said we don't agree with the finding with the risk assessment conclusions. That has slowed that process down. There is another process where the European Parliament has actually said the European Commission does not have the authority to make exemptions under the ROS directive, and so there's a legal conversation happening on a parallel track. So the bottom line is the DECA exemption or the DECA ban stands in the European Union. There is a conversation. There are attempts to exempt it from the ban, but those have not gone forward at this point.
And just yes. to clarify, so at this point the ban is scheduled to go into effect in July of 2006.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Grimm.
Okay. I didn't catch your name, sorry.
My name is Sarah Dahl.
Sarah Dahl, and could you give me your background, who you are with?
I'm with the org.
What qualification you can claim these issues?
I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council. I've been a program director there for the last 7 years, working on toxics issues for the last five. On this particular issue, I've been working on it for the last year, primarily on the policy side of it. And there are others here who will talk more specifically to the science.
Okay, follow up.
Certainly follow up.
Since that the DASH 12 mentions if there is no other alternative, then DECA stays. Is that it?
If there is no Representative Anderson, Representative Lim. If there is no viable, safer, nationally available commercial alternative, yes. The implication being we don't, this legislation in no way impacts fire safety standards. We don't want, people's things to all of a sudden burst into flame. But there are viable alternatives. And so we just want to make, you know, if the Department of Human Services does the evaluation and says those, these are safer, viable alternatives, then we should move in the direction of those safer alternatives.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And you said someone else will state what the alternatives are?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Doctor?
Chair, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak here. My name is Jan Cement. I'm the faculty at Portland State University and the Oregon Science University, but I speak here on behalf of the Oregon Physician for Social Responsibility. With my testimony, with my written testimony, I also submitted the resolution that was prepared by the American Public Health Association, and I think you should have a package on that. Can we have this PowerPoint up and running? I'm fine over here.
Actually, might be good to call Angela Crowley Cook.
Yeah.
Cook.
No.
Okay. Just realized you're from the same organization.
Yeah.
Yes.
While we're waiting, can I come back to...
Certainly can. Question.
There we go.
Question. In your testimony, you indicated, and I think it's in your printed material, that a number of states, including Montana, were considering some activity.
Mm-hmm.
You are, of course, aware of the fact that Montana legislature has adjourned and nothing came out of that session, as I understand it, on this point. So just to kind of clarify the record on that, they may have considered in the past tense, but did not act accordingly.
Representative Anderson, Representative Jensen, thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
Okay. So let me give you a quick overview here of the issue. It turns out that there is a global distribution with these compounds. In fact, they've been transported globally, even up to the Arctic, despite the fact that there's no production facility up there. They're ubiquitous in the environment, which means they're found in indoor air, outdoor air. They're found in home air. We also find them in water, rivers, and lakes and sediments. They have been found in sewer sludge. They have been found in all kinds of other media. So they are ubiquitous. They have been distributed throughout the world. The biological properties of these compounds is the fact that they bioaccumulate in wildlife and humans, which means that they move up in the food chain. And it turns out that the levels in humans here in America is far beyond what we have found in Europe or Japan. Some studies show we have 70 times higher levels here in America. And animal studies have looked at neurological toxicity, reproductive toxicity, developmental toxicity, and endocrine disruption. And there's also animal data that suggests carcinogenicity, which means that they potentially cause cancer in animals. And EPA, the U.S. Agency Environmental Protection, claims that there are possible human carcinogens. So that's just an overview of my talk today. And let me give you a quick overview of DECA. DECA is the major flame retardant in use. It's produced by four international companies that produce 125 billion pounds a year. And the only purpose of these compounds is that they retard fire, so they're used as flame retardants and nothing else. And we have over 500 million pounds in homes, cars, and offices currently in circulation. And the main usage of these compounds is as high-impact polystyrene in housings for TVs and computers, and they're also used in wires and cables and upholstery in furniture, as you can see on these images. Why should we consider these flame retardants? It turns out that flame retardants save lives. In fact, it's a very important public health intervention. As you pointed out, we in public health believe that you have to have flame retardants. If you look at the data going back 30 years, there was a high incidence of deaths due to fires in the past, but that eventually skyrocketed as a result of use of these plastics in households, more petrochemical products that inflame more easily. So it went up, and then with the use of these flame retardants, those numbers have come down. So they have served a very important function in public health. So the fire incidence has dropped as a result. And another feature here is that, in fact, they're inexpensive. The drawback is that many of these compounds, they break down in the environment and they might turn into more toxic substances. They have been shown to be metabolized in animals and in humans to more toxic compounds, and they're taken up very easily by wildlife and humans. And as I mentioned before, there's toxicological data in animals that suggests that they're harmful, and there are serious data gaps in humans that need to be addressed. Let me show you the chemical structure real quick here. You can see that on the left hand I have the PBDE structures, which is basically two phenol rings that are linked by this oxygen. And you also have the PCBs that were banned in the 70s that look very similar. In fact, I'll show you some toxicological data that indicates that they are not only structurally related, but probably also toxicologically. So those two compounds might in fact do the same thing, maybe because they are so closely related structurally. At the bottom you have a dioxin, which is a known human carcinogen also. What is the...
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Question? Thank you. Before we go on, we're using several different terms, and I want to make sure that I know when you're switching from one term to another. At some point we use DECA, BDE. At other points you use PBDE. And then finally we're dealing with hexabromodiphenyl ether, it looks like. I think it's important that we stay very clear on when we're talking about a group of compounds and when we're talking about the particular compound that seems to be under discussion today. And I wonder if you would highlight that as you go through it. If you'd back up one more slide. When you use PBDE, which are you talking about? Are you talking about the group, or are you talking about DECA-BDE?
On this slide, I refer to the group, but I will come and later on I'll talk more specifically about DECA. So there's a family of compounds that have been used in the past. Today, the only compound that's used is this one here, the DECA compound, right. But it's part of this family that have been used in the past. So I will show you up-to-date literature data that addresses the DECA compounds only.
All right, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. I would appreciate it if, when you're looking at the group of data and making assertions about the group, that you are careful to explain, if there are any, the differences between the group as a whole and DECA as a particular compound, so that we don't get confused about statements that apply to the group but not to the particular compound.
Right.
That seems to be the one we're talking about. I don't think there's any question about penta and octa that seems to be the consensus, that penta and octa are going to be in this band. But the discussion seems to be about penta, and that's the reason why I want to make certain that we're clear in as we distinguish among those different chemicals.
The discussion is about DECA, not about penta. But in my opinion, it turns out that these DECA compounds can be metabolized and broken down to other compounds, and so it's not very easy to distinguish. I think it's an artificial distinction just to talk about DECA on its own, because they can be broken down into other compounds that are potentially more toxic. So I think we need to have a more holistic view on this.
Thank you. Could I have another follow-up?
Follow-up?
Thank you. Okay. Well, then you've raised the next point for me, and that I'm going to ask, are you planning to spend some more time talking about uptake and bioaccumulation, and are you planning to spend more time talking about how this chemical breaks down? The reason I asked the question, just for your information, is that the testimony we had on Tuesday was to the contrary on both of those points.
Okay. I will address those two points.
Thank you.
Thank you. Here, just to compare the flame retardants with the PCBs, as I mentioned before, they're structurally very similar, but it turns out that these bromine compounds are more reactive than the chlorine compounds, which means that they are unstable and they probably degrade and metabolize quicker, which I just mentioned. It turns out that low numbers of bromines are more bioaccumulative and persistent, and there's strong absorption in sediment sludge with low breakdown. And you can see that the persistence or the half-life varies depending on the environmental condition, whether it's atmospheric, water, or soil. So that can range quite a bit. So how do we humans get exposed? It turns out that these flame retardants are not chemically bound with a covalent bound to the plastic that they're added to. They are chemical additives, and so it turns out that they travel all over the world and they do not stay where they're supposed to stay. In fact, we have seen that indoor air quality and measurements have indicated that we have very high levels indoors, even more so than outdoors, and that is associated with computers or new carpets in the home. We also found a wide range of measurements in houses measuring high levels of these compounds. Individuals, occupational studies of individuals that dismantle these computers have even higher level. There are two important points with this slide here. You see that we have a logarithmic scale on the y-axis on your left. The important point in this slide is that you can see that the dioxins and PCBs are decreasing over time when we look at the 70s compared to 2003. However, there's one class of compounds that's dramatically increasing. You have seen this rapid buildup of these flame retardants with a doubling time of 5 years or so, reaching extremely high levels of toxins, which is of high concern. Where do we get exposed? Humans probably get exposed through the food chain, besides other exposure pathways. This slide indicates the daily adult PBD uptake, and you can see that meat, fish, and dairy products have high levels of these flame retardants, and we can find these flame retardants in soy products, in infant formula, and in other sources as well. As a result of this exponential increase, Europe has decided to move ahead to ban DECA, as we discussed earlier. And you can see that European countries have much lower levels in humans compared to the United States. You have Japan here and Sweden, and as I mentioned, it ranges here. The United States is something like 10 times higher or 70 times higher than Japan or Sweden. Sweden peaked in 1998 and the levels have come down ever since.
Mr. Chair?
Question?
I'm just curious, Doctor, why is the state of Texas so low in relation to the rest of the United States?
I'm not sure how this sampling was done, so it depends on which kind of population you're looking at. That could be quite a lot of variability.
Mr. Chair?
Question?
Thank you. Now, if I understand, we are not on this slide, we're talking about the group of compounds.
That's right.
Do you have a comparable study on DECA alone?
This slide here indicates the breakdown into these different compounds. You see DECA here. In fact, here we see Oregon as one of the top states. The UK is on there also, but it breaks down the different compounds, and DECA is one of the major contributors here to the high levels in Oregon.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair? Thank you. Would you explain the measurements that you're using on this slide?
Measurement of these compounds is very difficult.
I'm sorry, I want the scale. It's a very simple question.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so micrograms per gram. So that's micrograms per gram in, there's different ways of looking at it, grams or parts per million.
All right. I have another follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up?
Thank you. You show about 10 parts per million in Oregon for DECA, if I've read that slide correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get that data from?
I don't have the reference for that, but I can get that reference for you.
The reason I ask that question is that's about a million times more than what was testified to on Tuesday, when it was when we were told that it was 10 parts per trillion. And that's a concern to me, because this is a million times more than in that testimony. And so it would be really useful to know why the measurement is so different.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson, may I answer that question? Representative Barnhart, this is actually a sample of dust, and I believe that what you were referring to was levels in breast milk.
Thank you. I missed. So I got so involved in the scale that I neglected to note the label for the slide. Thank you.
One question.
Any other chair? Okay. Yes, Senator Lim.
Thank you. When you are sampling, where do you sample? Portland area or rural area? What area are you sampling?
Representative Anderson, Representative Lim. In this particular study, this is an aggregated sample of dust in homes in Oregon that were from a variety of locations, both in Portland and in other areas. Representative Courtney, I believe, his home was a part of this particular sample. It's just an aggregated study as a way to sort of give folks a sense that this is in homes all over the country and the world, and that house dust is likely an exposure route. But that's simply to the basis of that information, and we can certainly get you a copy of this particular study.
Can we follow up? It seems to me, in my common understanding logic, New York should be higher because the more concentrated, more people. But Oregon, the 3.5 million population, seems like we have more higher toxics to do. Can you give us the logics why that happens?
There's a lot of inter-individual variability. It depends whether there's a new carpet that went into the house, whether people work in an occupational setting, whether they get exposed. So it depends quite a lot on the setting. And the data vary quite a bit.
Okay. Thank you.
This one here is flame retardants that are found in humans. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of inter-individual differences, and there's an increasing trend over time. As I mentioned before, we see a bubbling every 2 or 5 years, and the levels in North America are several times higher than in Europe. These data here were produced by the Northwest Environmental Watch, and we're looking at breast milk on this slide, and we're looking at several states, British Columbia, Montana, Oregon, and Washington, and you can see that, again, there's a lot of variability within individuals. But these studies have been replicated recently in other countries, such as Germany, where they found 40% of the samples to show positive for DECA. We also have studies from Texas where 30% of the samples were positive for DECA. So these compounds are present in breast milk.
Mr. Chair.
Question?
Thank you. You've got a bunch of different colors there and a couple of very, very high points. Could you explain that a little bit more, and also, again, tell us the scale?
This is part per trillion, the scale. And the colors don't mean anything in the sense that those are individuals.
Ah.
And so this is just a sample of individuals from Oregon and then Montana and so on.
All right, now, just if I could follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. In the sample you've got, are these individuals?
These are individuals.
10 individuals in Oregon that you examined, and none of them are as low as 10 parts per trillion, are they? All of them are much higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Moving on to the toxicological aspects of this. As you know, these compounds are fat soluble, so they concentrate in skin and fatty tissue, adipose tissue, and they also happen to distribute to the brain. There are animal studies that can show that these compounds concentrate in the brain because there's a lot of fat in the brain, which obviously raises concerns concerning the development of individuals, as this fetus here on your right. It can also be toxic to developing a reproductive system. There has been data that indicates that it's a liver toxicant. We have data that indicate that there are endocrine disruptors, and DECA in particular is liver carcinogen. It causes adenocarcinomas in the liver in rats and mice at high doses. And as I mentioned before, it's a possible human carcinogen. If I may, I would like to show some data from PCBs real quick, and I'll come back to DECA again. But PCBs have been documented in the past to be elemental toxicants. They have had impacts on early childhood memory, attention loss, depression, hyperactivity, and in preteens they have shown to decrease intelligence, memory, and attention. So there are indications that these PCBs have serious toxicological endpoints. And when we come back to the flame retardants, a lot of studies show that these flame retardants have very similar outcomes. We are looking at an endocrine effect here, which means that these substances are able to bind the estrogen or androgen receptor and mimic the endocrine system. They have anti-estrogenic activities, which means that they have shown to be to delay puberty in male rats. They have shown to feminize male rats also, and you have the references on there. And the reason why these compounds are able to do that is because they can mimic estrogenic compounds by binding to those receptors and potentially stimulating a cascade of genes or potentially blocking these receptors to alter development in humans. The effects on the thyroid system, as you know, thyroid is very important for energy metabolism in adults and as in infants, but in infants it's very crucial to have stable thyroid levels too for the development of the nervous system. But these substances have shown to alter the thyroid levels. In fact, it decreases thyroid levels, which has an impact on intelligence.
Mr. Chair?
Question?
Thank you. On that last slide, what's a high dose? The last bullet point.
Okay. That particular point is looking at these enzymes that are induced, and I don't know what doses were given in this study, and I can verify that for you.
Thank you.
DECA research in animals has indicated that there are developmental neurotoxicants. For example, early postnatal exposure in mice causes permanent behavioral impairment identical to those produced by PCBs. We have seen that they act as reproductive toxicants as well. Again, I mentioned feminizations and impacts on the sexual development, and they can have endocrine disruptors, as I mentioned before, also. You wanted me to address the breakdown products of DECA. It turns out that there are several studies now that have come out that looks at the breakdown product of DECA. We have known that DECA is unstable since 1973, but those studies were done in organic solvents. More recent studies show that under natural conditions, such as sediments, they can break down. Also, that's a study that just came out in 2004. And DECA compounds, they are sensitive to UV light or anaerobic breakdown in sludge, and they've also been found to break down in fish other animals also, and in rodents, as I mentioned here, the point from here, DECA can be absorbed and break down in rodents also. They get debrominated and they can react.
Now, before we go on, do you plan to talk about, Mr. Chair, if I may, do you plan to talk about what those breakdowns are? And if not, could you give us a little bit now?
So DECA can be broken down to nona, octa, and penta. And as you know, those bromines can sit anywhere, so they can be transformed and metabolized into all kinds of different substances.
Thank you.
The risk for the fetus is based on the fact that these flame retardants are able to cross the placenta, and as I mentioned before, these compounds concentrate in breast milk because breast milk has a very high content in fat, In fact, if you look at breast milk, we have three times as much flame retardants in breast milk compared to blood. The children in general are more susceptible because the blood-brain barrier hasn't fully developed, and they have high hand-to-mouth activities. They have high exposures because they're closer to the carpets and to the exposure sources. So children are at increased risk, and the next slide demonstrates very clearly that a typical family of 2.1 kids or so, you can see that the youngest individual in this family has the highest level of DECA, probably as a result of these behavioral issues and physiological properties of children. The reason why this is important is because the child's brain development is crucial, and if you look at an IQ curve of a general population of 260 million individuals, for example, if the mean is 100, we have 6 million mentally retarded individuals and 6 million gifted individuals. But a slight shift of that mean down to 95 could mean that we have a 57% increase in mentally retarded individuals, which corresponds to 9.4 million, and the gifted is reduced to 2.4 million. So the developmental impact on the brain and the impact on IQ levels in the general population could be enormous. So the current concerns about the DECA substances is the fact that we have enormous reservoirs, 500 million pounds that are currently in circulation. We have worldwide contamination, widespread human exposure, and neurodevelopmental damage. And we have seen that these DECA substances can break down into toxic byproducts. And this bill here is endorsed by a lot of other organizations, as Sarah mentioned before.
All right. Questions? I believe you're going to mention the other alternatives to DECA.
It will come up next.
Also be outside. Okay. Tell me, do you have any information on how computer cover material degrades so that it shows up in testing?
These substances are not bound, so they just leak out, and individuals who dismantle these computers are extremely high risk for extremely high levels of these flame retardants.
You have tests on that?
Yeah. There's a Swedish study that just was released a few weeks ago on exactly that.
Can you bring us copies
yes.
of that? And how do you test? Were you just testing on rats, in experimental rats?
I haven't done these studies myself.
Someone was?
Yes. So there's very little human data. There are serious gaps in immunological research on DECA in particular, and it's difficult to conduct these human studies because the epidemiologic studies are difficult to conduct because we have exposure that happened early on, and then we have the health outcomes that happen much later, so it's hard to draw conclusions and links between that exposure and disease.
So you really don't have any human studies. You have animal studies.
So the human studies indicate that we are exposed at extremely high levels, and the industry has pulled out DECA and PENTA as a result of those high exposure levels.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have clear links to human disease because those studies are very difficult to conduct.
You mentioned wildlife. I assume you're talking about wildlife out in the open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How were they testing on that you had, were the amounts that in, it was a hazard to wildlife?
So they catch animals and they measure the levels in those animals, and then they study the reproductive abilities of those animals, and they see whether those compounds decrease the reproductive success of certain species.
Okay, and you'll bring us those studies too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
What form of DECA has been used for testing? Is it a powder form? Is it a viscous form?
DECA is powder, so it's a solid compound.
DECA is powder?
It's powder.
Well, that disputes what we heard the other day, that they were told it was viscous and became solid.
Becomes solid?
Got to be solid for a computer cover.
DECA is a solid. DECA is a solid.
Okay, so it's a powder that is
a powder
pressed into a form?
That's added to the plastic, that's right.
Okay. All right, question from...
Just a comment on that?
Yes.
I think what we heard Tuesday was that it was crystalline. I mean, that's what a powder is, right?
Same thing.
I mean, I think that's consistent with what we heard Tuesday.
I heard that was in the Pinta, which was in the fabric material. Was I wrong on that? We'll check back on that.
I'll look through my stuff.
Right. Someone had a comment or question? Representative Jensen.
Yeah, I've got some questions. At the very beginning, somewhere I was seeing that DECA is bioaccumulative. Is that your statement?
That is true.
It's my understanding that's not true. That it is not listed as bioaccumulative. Can you help me with this?
DECA is not as easily absorbed as other substances in this class, but it still bioaccumulates, maybe at lower levels than other compounds.
It doesn't seem... Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
That's true.
As I understand it, that doesn't seem to agree with some of the other scientific community.
Okay.
And I'm looking for help in resolution to that question.
Okay, we can get you that information.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh,
you had some more questions.
Yeah. The other thing, I'm struck that we're making in your last slide something of a quantum leap. There's not particularly arguing that a shift here, you know, may result a shift down 5 percentage points or 5 points on a IQ scale, whatever scale that might be, and whatever IQ thing, and I'll leave that to the good colleague here to discuss in that. But it's a quantum leap to go to this side and say that this is a consequence of DECA, which is the implication that I have from looking at the slides you have here and the presentation that you've made to us. I'm not going to get into quarreling over what you have on the slide. Far be it from me to do that, but I have real difficulty with the connectors to get to that slide and make it an equation to DECA.
The point I was trying to make is that these substances like PCBs and these flame retardants, they are in a general class that have similar neurodevelopmental endpoints, and the combination of all those exposures, and DECA is part of that exposure, will lead to this kind of a shift in the intelligence curve. I'm not saying that we can pin this on DECA. The world is too complicated for that to be true, but the combination of all those different exposures, the PCBs in combination with these flame retardants, yeah, could potentially lead to something like this.
Mr. Chair, if I
Hello.
Could, the pinning with DECA on the PCBs, seems to me to maybe be a little bit of a stretch. I'd rather, if I'm going to act on this, act on DECA, not on PCBs. Additionally, I note in the other presentation you had that when we're dealing with this particular general category, we've got DECA and other in this category. But and in some of your slides, you have all of them piled together to give us an appearance of something that may not in fact be true if we're confining ourselves to DECA. I don't think there's a particular concern on the part of many of us in the committee here that the other substances are mentioned in the bill probably should be eliminated, and I think I think we've heard testimony that that's kind of a moot point at this time, since the manufacturers are basically have withdrawn them from the market. Though I don't personally have a problem, Mr. Chair, with passing a bill to support that particular position, even though the industry is no longer marketing those. But the one that seems to me to be in question for us is the issue of DECA. And as I go through your presentation, your slides, you seem to be tying them all together in a lot of the slides that we've looked at, and that makes me have to do a lot more research before I'm comfortable with it.
Thank you, Representative Barnard.
Thank you. We went through these really fast, and so I suspect I'm going to be asking about things you've already told us, but because I didn't quite get it in. I think one of the things you're claiming is that DECA and the other polybrominated materials that we've been discussing react in very similar ways in animal studies and in other places. Is as a preliminary question, is that what you're claiming?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And also that they react very similarly to the PCBs that have already been banned for quite a long time in animal studies, and therefore it's your assumption that it would tend to react in similar ways in the human condition too. Is that an accurate statement of your claim?
Yeah, that is. It's very difficult for us in environmental health to draw clear-cut conclusions because these studies are very difficult in humans because we can't expose individuals to these substances.
Well, I understand that, and I don't think you get it through the Human Subjects Committee, so I appreciate that. Another question, if I may, Mr. Chair. So sort of following up on this point, I think you're also claiming, if I don't misunderstand, that when you take the PCBs that are already in the environment and then you add these chemicals into the environment that all react in very similar ways, that they tend to accumulate together, and it's the overall impact of all of them together that would cause damage or problems for people rather than any one of them individually in that mix.
That's exactly right.
Is that what you're claiming?
Yeah, it's a cumulative effect.
Thank you. Now I'd like to switch topics and talk about something slightly different. If I were in your field, but let me ask you this: many of these studies that you talk about seem to have been done very recently, mm-hmm. in the last 4 or 5 years. Is that accurate?
That's right.
Okay. Then, if I had studied this area and stopped my research about 1999 or 1998, most of the stuff you've told us I wouldn't know about, would I?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I would know about. The effect of solvents and UV on breaking down these materials, because those studies were done in the 70s.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, I think, is probably more of a political question than a scientific one, and so if you don't have an answer for it, that's fine. But I'm just curious, it's sort of related to what Representative Jensen was asking, why is it that now Penta and Octa, there seems to be no controversy that they're bad news, and that such bad news that the industry has chosen to voluntarily withdraw them, and yet we have all this controversy now about DECA? Is it just because the research is more difficult? Is it because that the prevalence of DECA is greater and therefore it's a harder fight? Or would we, I guess my question really at bottom is, would we have found sort of similar, night and day, different versions of reality being given by you all and by the industry about the other two substances if we'd entered this discussion a few years back?
So the other two substances were withdrawn because the breast milk levels and human blood samples were so extremely high that the industry decided to pull out because there was too big a human body burden based on these substances. The reason why DECA has not been studied up to recently is because it's, for one, technically very difficult to study DECA because it's a much bigger molecule, so technically the technology wasn't there to do it. So that's one of the reasons. The second reason is that they have in the past have been presumed safe because it looks like they're excreted very rapidly, much more so than other compounds, and we didn't know about the metabolism and breakdown of these substances. And the third reason is that it's very easy to contaminate the samples in the laboratory because these substances are everywhere, even in the lab. So those are the three reasons why these studies haven't been done with DECA up till now.
I am going to have to close this up. We have a number of other people to be heard yet. Sarah, if you had some brief comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to your comment. If we had this conversation 3 years ago, industry would have been in here saying that they didn't support a ban on Penta and Octa. It's just that the science has moved forward to the point where industry now says, yes, Penta and Octa, and we are in the process. That's why you see all of these studies happening now around DECA. They're just more and more. It's a very hot, happening field right now. So.
Thank you.
One final question. I guess you're already off. On the slide that says, I think it's too forward from that DECA higher in kids and infants, a California family of four. So obviously you are testing in some children. Is there a longitudinal study to carry that forward at this point to show what the effects are on a child or children, large scale, hopefully?
They're expensive studies. I'm not sure if they are undertaking those. Takes a lot of money to follow people over a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be nice.
I'm in a heart study from Harvard from 20 years ago, 25.
That's right.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you're in that study.
Yeah, welcome to the group.
Very famous study.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Well, Angela, you did want to testify. All right, fine. And if I could also have Diane Drum and Martin Taylor come forward.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming forward, I just wanted to say that I appreciate the allowance for all the questions. This is one of those areas where the issue is so fact-based that making sure we know what the facts are is really important.
Well, I think we tried to be fair to both sides.
Yeah, I think you have. Thank
Dr.
you.
Dr. Dawson was technical as well, and it's hard to sort through some of the technology, but I do appreciate you both being here. All right, I guess, let me call Brett Lawrence, and we'll have Martin come forward a little later.
Representative Anderson, Martin Taylor had to leave for another meeting. Yeah.
All right, Rhett and Rebecca. No, Rhett, if you'll come forward.
Right.
Just the three of you. I see you're going to be using the computer also. Okay, Rhett, just a minute.
Thank you.
You go ahead.
I'm Angela Crowley Cook. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're an organization of over 1,000 members here in Oregon, working on environmental health issues, nuclear weapons, and gun violence prevention. And I'm going to talk about alternatives, but before I go into that, there's one point I wanted to mention on this particular slide. It gets confusing when talking about these chemicals and all the different parts per trillion, parts per million. So this slide is a great example of the level of what level we need to be at to show harm in humans and animals. So that very top level, that this scale is in parts per trillion, and if we change it, that top level is going to be one part per million. And that's the level where we see harm in humans from PCBs, the class of chemicals that was banned in the 70s. It's also the level at which we see harm in animals from PBDEs, what we're talking about today. So it's that top level that we're talking about, which that's what we're concerned about, reaching that level of PBDEs in our bodies, which could potentially cause harm to humans. I just wanted to mention that.
You're saying that 210,000 parts per trillion let's go to PBDEs, the 62,000 parts per trillion on a 1 million.
Yes, 1 million parts per trillion.
Is the breakoff line as to what's safe and what's unsafe. All right. So
that's, we know in animals for PBDEs, that's the level, and we know that is the level in humans with PCBs.
Okay. All right.
Another question?
Yes, sir.
And do you believe all these toxins are the human caused or just natural phenomena, some percentage of it?
Boy, that is something, Dr. Semenza, do you know?
Say that it's they're human produced, there's no natural source of these compounds.
This is the all human caused.
Caused by human production. Yeah, okay. There's no natural source of these compounds.
How do you know for sure for that?
I think the best indication is longitudinal studies that have shown that they haven't existed in the past, and they have shown up very recently, and they correlate with production of these substances.
Thank you.
Would they have been tested in the past? Same testing?
Yeah.
And nobody was testing back then, though.
Testing in humans? So there are lots of samples that have been stored in freezers and laboratories, and we can go back to those and test them today.
All right, good.
Thank you for letting me discuss that slide. So Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility is in support of Senate Bill 962, and I specifically want to address alternative flame retardants to DECA, and I'm not going to speak to Penta and Octa, I'll only address alternatives to DECA in this presentation. Everything in this presentation is from these four recent studies, all came out in the last 4 years, as you can see from the University of Minnesota, the Maine Bureau of Health and Department of Environmental Protection, Washington Department of Ecology and Department of Health, and Clean Production Action. These four reports have summarized a lot of scientific data, studies, research, and I'm happy to get you any of these reports. The basic conclusion from all of these reports is that viable and safe alternatives to DECA are available. There are alternatives that meet the current fire safety standards. Alternatives have minimal extra costs. Alternatives have been evaluated for health by a variety of institutions. And companies are already switching to alternatives to DECA. The products that we're talking about specifically with DECA, we're mostly talking about TV enclosures. 80% of DECA is used in electronic enclosures, and most of that is TVs, some computer monitors. DECA is also used in some textiles, mattresses and upholstery, no human clothing. The remaining percentage is used in a variety of products like rubber, wire, cable, and other products. There are three basic approaches to alternatives to DECA. The first is physically separating heat-producing elements. The second is the use of naturally flame-resistant materials. And thirdly, there are other halogen-free chemicals. Now, there are different fire safety standards for different products. Draperies have their own fire standards, and electronics have their own. And I want to make really clear that phasing out of brominated flame retardants does not affect the fire safety standards that we have. Those will remain in place, and any alternatives used will need to meet these current standards. Here are three examples of different fire safety standards for different products. I just picked three, but there are quite a few. Here are some companies using alternatives in their products that meet these highest fire safety standards. We have Dell, GE, Comfort Care Mattresses, and a host of drapery manufacturers. I also want to touch on the extra cost of using alternatives as opposed to using DECA. It's true currently that DECA is the most inexpensive flame retardant, mainly because it is the most widely used. However, these alternatives do have somewhat higher costs, but if we put this cost in perspective, the cost increase for a $300 television set for one family would be under $8. or under 2.5% of the total purchase price. Oregon PSR feels that that cost is worth the public health safety, especially for the whole family and for our communities. And I also want to mention that this is the cost right now. This is from that April 2005 study. As DECA is replaced by alternatives more and more, we'll see these costs decrease. Alternative flame retardants have been evaluated for health effects in humans. Here are a few samples of alternatives. The first five have low or minimal impacts on human health. And that last one, as you can see, is extremely toxic to humans. So of all, there's about 27 alternatives that have been evaluated. Some do have lower health effects. Some are toxic. Some we need more data. But I really want to emphasize here that DECA is the most widely used flame retardant in the world. And that's why our first step is to phase out of using DECA. We want to make sure we're not replacing it with other toxic substances. And we would love to do that in the future. Our first step is phasing out DECA. Here are some examples of companies that are currently using alternatives to DECA. The left side is the kind of product. The right side is the company and what they're using as an alternative. You see many familiar companies, Sony, Volvo, Toshiba, Panasonic. And here are other products. So these two slides are the wide range of products, all 100% of products that DECA is used in. I also want to point out that alternatives to DECA have been used for quite some time. In 1989, Germany voluntarily stopped using and producing DECA, which suggests that alternatives have been available for quite some time. Here in the U.S., the largest user of DECA is phasing out of using DECA. Panasonic is the second largest electronics manufacturer in the world. They were the largest DECA user in the United States, and currently they are phasing out of using DECA in all their products. And I want to go back to fire safety standards for just a moment. Panasonic is not going to make any products that do not meet the current highest flame retardant safety standards. So all of their products using alternatives do meet those standards. They don't want to get sued, as well as other reasons. Here in Oregon, we also have companies switching to alternatives. Intel, Hewlett-Packard, and Xerox are all either using alternatives currently or are phasing out of using brominated flame retardants. Here's other examples of companies around the world phasing out or not using DECA any longer. And these are major companies. It's not a complete list. There are other smaller companies that make cable wires and other things that we might not have heard of that are also phasing out of the use of DECA. This quote, I want to end with this. This is from the April 2005 study from the University of Massachusetts. It really sums up the alternatives issue when we talk about DECA. If market drivers existed in the United States, nearly all manufacturers have the technology and know-how to meet the demand for DECA-free products that meet strict fire safety standards. And we need to create those market drivers here in Oregon and in the United States. These companies have the technology. They meet the current flame retardant, the current fire safety standards, and we need to push this to happen in order for us to protect the public health of Oregonians, especially of our developing children. Thank you very much.
Diana? Hi, I'm Diane Drum. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm sorry Representative Lim isn't here because I've had the privilege of being a maternal child health nurse in his district for a number of years.
He'll be back, I think.
I'm a mother of three children. Today, I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I have also submitted testimony from the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians, the Oregon Pediatric Nurse Practitioner Association, and the Oregon Center for Environmental Health. The Oregon Nurses Association supports the passage of Senate Bill 962 with the inclusion of DECA brominated diphenyl ethers. This is a high priority bill for us, one of our number one priority bills, because we feel it has major implications for infant and child health in Oregon. First of all, before I begin my statement, I just want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank you for your good questions, and I want to thank you for your service to Oregon.
Thank you, Diane. We have your printed material here. Could you summarize for us where...
I want to tell you, it breaks my heart.
20 minutes to get about six people in, so...
Well,
you've given a lot of time to the technical part, and...
Yeah, and you know what? Is it okay if I do something that's very unpolitical? I have a picture is worth a thousand words.
Okay.
And the people who are lobbyists who know this work said, don't show them the picture. It doesn't matter. But I'm going to show you the picture. If all I have is a picture. You can read my testimony. Basically, my testimony says that we see the world based on what we think is true in the world. And we can look back and say, why in the world did they keep putting mercury in Minnebata Bay? Why in the world did we keep putting lead in our country, in our soil? Why do we have 1 in 20 children who are still exposed to lead today with serious consequences for our nation and for those individuals? And it's because people saw the evidence but got confused by other things. There were people who said, oh, lead is no problem at low doses. Lead is no problem with this or that. The research, they claimed the research was inconclusive or inconvenient because they had a vested interest and a vested perspective that what they were doing was okay. And I don't want us to make that same mistake with PDBEs. As a public health nurse, as a mother, if there is a toxin that so acutely targets our infants, that so acutely targets the maternal child environment that our infants depend on, then it is only sensible from a nursing perspective, from a public health perspective, to take precautions, especially when alternatives exist. And I don't know if you can see that from here. I don't know if it's politically horrible for me to step up to your desk.
I think we can see it.
Okay. Well, if the picture is worth a thousand words, this is a picture of the world that a lot of us live in. This is a picture of the world that I'm a nurse in. We do not know why Oregon has the highest levels of PDBEs. We do not know why Oregon is always second or third in our incidence of breast cancer. And we do not know why autism rates are increasing dramatically. We do not know if those questions are connected.
And this is an autistic child, or?
This is just, to me, this is a woman with a baby. And this woman is suffering from cancer. And there is evidence that the PBDEs are carcinogenic. And this baby, do you think that this woman is not so worried about dying? This woman is worried about the baby that's in her uterus, and she's worried about the baby that was on her breast. And that's who we need to be worried about here today. We are not interested in threatening our way of life, our standard of living, or any of that. We are only interested in being able to pass our way of life and our life down to our children. And this is the world that I move in as a public health nurse. It might not be a world that you're really familiar with, but there are questions we will never answer because there is no control group. No control group. You don't have any humans unexposed.
Diane, I'm going to change directions here and let you go ahead and read your testimony if you want.
No.
We will carry this over until Tuesday, and the other side will be able to bat cleanup at that time. So anybody that would like to speak, go ahead. Is that all right?
Did I just, like, bore you to death? I'm sorry.
No, I just, you summarized. Is there more? Do you want to read the testimony, or do you want to just leave it for us to read?
What would you prefer?
Jefferson Martin?
I could ask a question or two, if that would be acceptable.
Yeah, we're going to take that until 3 this way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that is said in one of these pieces of paper that I just received, oh, here it is. It's in the middle of the ONA May 18th letter. And it says, quote, in our opinion, there's ample evidence of a link between DECA and adverse effects on the brain development in mammals ages prenatal to 1 year. Childhood brain development is linked to delayed learning, autism, and certain kinds of developmental disability. Now, the question is, and that's the end of the quote, the question is, do we have an established link between sentence number one and sentence number two, that is, the potential adverse effects on brain development in mammals, and childhood brain development linked to delayed learning, autism, and certain kinds of developmental disability, other than the correlation in time? Is there anything else that would suggest a link between these things at this stage?
Representative Anderson and Representative Barnhart, I just want to, are you saying, is there a link between the studies on animals that show neurological development and studies in humans that show neurological development?
No, I'm asking a different question.
Okay.
I'm sorry I didn't make it clearer. The claim here appears to be that there may be a link between delayed learning, autism, and developmental disability. I'm reversing it on you. And the increase in the environment of DECA.
Yes.
Other than the fact that there's some correlation in time, is there some other link that would suggest that?
The problem with definitively proving this case in humans...
I'm asking for definitive proof.
Okay. The link is that we see it in animals. Let me tell you that there is not one human carcinogen, not one, that does not cause cancer in laboratory mammals. Okay, so when we have DECA, BD, okay, you know the thing. When we have these things causing these brain developmental problems in mammals, in every mammal that we tested in, then we have no choice but to draw links to humans. We have acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. We have a lot of neurological functions that are very, very similar. Does that answer your question?
I think it does, yes. Thank you.
I would caution you to, from having done research on rats and humans, it can be a real stretch because of the size of the mammal.
Right, and the comparison of levels, and then it becomes, you know, we find mammals that, for example, hedgehogs, if we're looking at liver cancer and liver function, for some reason hedgehogs function more closely to the human than in neurological development. In neurological developmental issues, rats are one of the preferred mammals in terms of how that neurological development occurs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, a couple of staff questions.
I had a question for Angela. Your testimony focused on the availability of alternatives currently in the marketplace. There's a threshold in the current version of the bill that basically calls upon RDHS here. If they make a determination that there is a nationally available alternative, then they are bound to make a recommendation, in effect, banning the use of DECA in products here in Oregon. In your mind, is there already a nationally available alternative to DECA that you would take to RDHS and argue that they should issue a ban, if you will, almost immediately?
Yes, definitely. The four reports that I stated looked at exactly the same thing. University of Massachusetts, the Maine study, the Washington study. Their report was extremely similar to the report that stands in the bill now. And all three of them say there are nationally available, viable, safe alternatives. So yes, we strongly recommend a phase out of DECA immediately.
If I might follow up, just a quick question. Then in your mind, if a ban or a phase out of DECA became more widespread. In your mind, could these alternatives be produced in sufficient quantities to replace DECA in the marketplace?
That I'll have to get back to you on.
Okay, thank you very much. Normally we have another committee right on our heels right now. They're not going to be in here, so right, you're on.
Chair Anderson, it was just pointed out to me by Matt Blevins, we have a number of people in the audience today who may not be able to come back for next Tuesday's hearing. I'd be glad to defer my time to let...
Go ahead and do it today. Yeah. We'll finish up today.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Get my written testimony. I'll actually be very brief, in fact. My name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm an environmental advocate with OSPIRG, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. I wanted to just clarify one point that was made in some earlier testimony. There was a question about some testimony that was made on Tuesday about the varying forms of PINTA and DECA and whether one is a solid or... And I just wanted to... I found that the testimony from Tuesday and just wanted to read the one sentence that clarified the form. PINTA is a viscous liquid made up of a complex mixture of lower brominated diphenyl ethers, whereas DECA is a white, high-melting point solid composed of more than 97% of the fully brominated diphenyl ether.
Okay.
So if that explains that. And actually, the one most of the other testimony I would have provided is in my written testimony has already been stated by others today. The other point I would make is on this issue of the impact on flammability standards and fire safety standards. I did want to again reemphasize the point that this bill will have no impact whatsoever on fire safety or flammability standards, and that, you know, clearly a number of companies have already made that switch over to alternatives because they believe there are safety reasons for doing that, and that those other alternatives are just, you know, as good at preventing the spread of fires. And also, I wanted to make the point, attached to my testimony is a letter from the Oregon State Firefighters Council. They also support the passage of Senate Bill 962 for the reason that there are studies that indicate that as PBDEs burn up, as products that contain PBDEs burn up, they release a number of toxic chemicals, including sometimes dioxins and furans, which, you know, so then firefighters are in there breathing in these chemicals, dioxins, and so they have great concerns about the use of these chemicals. And so when there are alternatives, obviously that lessens the risk to them, and so they support the passage of a bill that would require the use of alternatives rather than these chemicals that are causing, you know, harm to them. So just want to make that point, and that's really all I had to say. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
One question.
Senator Lim.
And for my educational, while on the same subject, do you know what kind of a chemical product spray out from the helicopter when they have a fire in the mountain? What's the name of the product? Is it harmful anyway?
Chair Anderson, Representative Lim, I don't know that specific chemical that's used in forest fires. I'm sorry?
I think it's borates.
Okay, so I would assume that it's not a PBD.
What's that? Chemical. Is that any harmful anyway?
It's like Borexo.
Okay.
Well, that clarifies it.
Well, it's a much different compound. It's not ether.
Okay. I believe it may have its own set of concerns, but it's not related to these products.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Martin, did you want to testify as well? I think you're out of the room when we called you. You're more than welcome, too. I'm going to call also Rebecca Mix, I believe it is, and Myrna Sewell.
Representative Anderson, I would just like to apologize if I went on too long, but this is the third time I've been in Salem, and I was kind of shocked when you asked me to summarize. So.
Thank you.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor with the Oregon Nurses Association, and really not a lot left to say after my member has testified. I think the only thing I would point out is, you know, to the extent that people have questions why ONA is involved in this issue, you have your answer. We have members who are very passionate that there is a health risk to their patients, And I don't envy your position. I'm not a healthcare provider or a person with a scientific background, and you have competing science. And I guess it really turns to the question of who do you trust to make these kinds of assessments for you. And I'm both professionally obligated and, frankly, inclined to trust nurses. So I will leave it with that.
Thank you. Right, Myrna? Who's up? Either.
I'm Myrna.
So okay, fine.
Thank you, Representative Henderson, and also all of the members of the environment community.
Could you move the mic a little closer,
please? Do that. I'm Myrna Saul, and I am the director of Woodmont School for Dyslexics. It's a private nonprofit school that I am presently the Learning Disability Association of Oregon's president, and I'm on the National LDA board. And there, I also, along with my written report, I have others who are supporting the bill from the Developmental Disabilities Coalition that you'll get, the Oregon PTA, the March of Dimes, and FACT, which is Family Action Coalition team, and they all are couldn't be here, a representative. And so, first I want to thank you for bringing up this issue. You can see my report, so I'm not going to read it all. We are concerned about the brominated flame retardants, but the Learning Disability Association of Oregon is part of a national effort, as you can see, linked with the American Association of Mental Retardation and the Autism Society. You've already heard a report about autism is pretty high in Oregon. I have been involved with learning disabled people, because I have adults that I work with too, since 1970. And I have seen a rise on, even when I'm testing, on the number of errors that people make, the increases. And all of these organizations, our groups, are observing increased numbers of children with learning and developmental disabilities. We all know that there are many factors that contribute to learning and developmental disabilities. We've talked in the past about nutrition, and we mentioned today about genetics. And there's social factors that maybe that's more difficult to take care of. But one factor is often least acknowledged and the easiest to prevent are environmental factors. These chemicals that we are making in the labs, these new products that we are making as humans. And so I would just encourage us to phase this out. This is something that we could do. If we have shown in the past that we have the willingness to create a healthier environment for our children by reducing the lead and tobacco exposures, we have another opportunity to do the right thing now, and I urge you to take steps to phase out all forms of PBDEs.
Thank you very much. Rebecca?
Hello. I'm Rebecca, a parent of 10-month-old Kira, and here as a breastfeeding mother on behalf of all families in Oregon. From the moment I found out I was pregnant, I've tried to live a very healthy life, eat organic food, pesticides out of the house, painted her room with environmentally friendly, low-toxic paint. And as a breastfeeding mom, I know that is the best alternative for her. But it's also very sad to know of the chemicals, toxic flame retardants, that are present in the milk that I am giving to her. It's frustrating as a parent to be unable to protect my child from these toxins. So I'm here today asking you to please support Senate Bill 962.
Okay.
And there is also testimony that was handed out to you, written testimony from two Oregon mothers that had their milk tested for the presence of these chemicals. Both mothers had PBDEs in their breast milk, and they participated in the house dust test as well.
Okay. You personally have not been tested?
I have not.
Yes. Right? Darling baby.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. All right. I think we've had some very good testimony here today. And any questions?
Mr. Chair, I just suggest that we get Kira in a debate with the industry. That could be very interesting.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and I will close the hearing on Senate Bill 962 and close and adjourn our meeting.
So, did you want to announce 962 beyond Tuesday?
Yeah. Well,
or do you want to announce the board now?
I did. Just posted. Okay.